This is Valentine's Day, February the 14th. We are at the Arizona Accordion Club, and our featured guest for the evening is Frank Morocco.
Frank, now I've been looking forward to doing this interview for quite a while. And I've done a little bit of research, and I see that all the great accordionists that I've met so far come from Chicago. That's Art Van Dam and Al Monte and you. What is it about Chicago?
I don't know. I think it's the pizza. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe the cold weather. Maybe we're all inside practicing on all those cold winter days.
Now, you studied, though, and I think Al Monte did, too, under the legendary Andy Rizzo. What do you recall about his influence upon you and your playing?
Well, he was actually my first teacher who I studied with for 8 or 9 years was George Stefani in Waukegan, Illinois. And that was my best, not my best teacher, that was my first and excellent teacher. Then the last year I went with Andy, and Andy sort of put the finishing touches on. My teacher said, "I can't teach you anymore, now it's time to go to Andy Rizzo."
I was in the same shape when I was learning the accordion. I played through three teachers myself. Now, as a teenager and in your early 20s, you traveled with a quartet all over the United States, and you played the top hotels and some of the best clubs.
Yes.
What was the instrumentation of your group? What did you have as your quartet?
We had the guitar player doubled on clarinet and saxophone. We had a bass player, myself on accordion, and occasionally a drummer, but a lot of the times it was just a trio.
Well, that's interesting.
When we got enough money, we added a drummer, but most of the time it was just the trio, which was very popular in those days. And we did the Nevada circuit, Reno, Tahoe, and Las Vegas over and over and over again.
And your guitar man was playing sax?
Yeah, he doubled on clarinet and saxophone. Very fine musician.
What do you recall as your first big break in show business?
Let me see. I think it was when most of the studio work was being done at that time by Carl Fortino, who's a great accordion player. And actually, he did far more recording than I've done. I'm probably the most recorded in recent years. But I took over in 1980. Before that, Carl, and before him, Dominic Fonteri did most of the accordion work in Hollywood. And when Carl retired to become the music contractor at Paramount Studio, I sort of inherited the accordion work then. So I was getting it all from that time on. So it's been about the last 25 years. So that's really been the best years of my life, the last 25.
Actually, that's been the best 25 of mine, too, because I moved to Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, yeah. Well, I shouldn't say the best time, because it was all good. Even the hard times when I was traveling on the road with, you know, from one town we'd be in Tucson, or not in Tucson, it's like Oklahoma City for 2 weeks, and then we'd be in Dallas for 3 weeks, and someplace else for 2 weeks. We sort of lived like gypsies for a few years there, but my wife stuck it out with me. She traveled with me, and when my daughter became school age, I told my wife, wherever we are when Cindy is 6 years old, that's the start of school, then I'll have to figure out how to make a living. So wherever we are, that's where I stopped traveling.
And that's how you ended up in Hollywood?
That's how I ended up in L.A. I guess that was a stroke of luck, yeah. Because I could have ended up in Podunk, you know. So it was up to me then to be a man and, you know, support my family. So at that time, the accordion was still very popular, so I started teaching. I got a job because I didn't know one person in L.A., no one. And there I was with a wife and a baby, and I had a house trailer. No money. And so I just started teaching at a music studio, an accordion school. And then little by little, people started discovering that I was a pretty good player. So I would get a Saturday night job, then the word would go around town. Pretty soon I was playing every night. Even though it's a big city, the musicians are a small group, you know. When someone new comes into town, the word gets around. So I, right away, I started, getting busy, so I was able to make a living from my family. And so I've been there ever since. But until 1980, I wasn't doing all that well. I was just playing parties, you know, like most of the guys do. I was playing for parties and some teaching. But then when I started doing the studio work, that was lucrative, and that was very good.
Now, prior to the studio work, I know that from looking at your resume, you spent 6 Love Boat cruises and played with Les Brown's band. Tell us about what you recall from those great. You weren't playing Over the Waves, were you?
No,
that's a bad joke.
No, I was with Les Brown from 1972. 1972 was the last trip overseas for Bob Hope, where he went around and entertained the troops. It was the winding down, the end of the Vietnam War. And that was really a fine experience, traveling all over, you know, entertaining the troops. And so then Les Brown liked the way I played. I played the quarter box on that trip, incidentally, because they couldn't get the piano player that they wanted to take with them. So someone in the band who knew me said, hey, why don't you call Frank Morocco? He plays quarter box and he could substitute for the piano, you know. So then it turned out that I also could play some piano. So after I did that trip, then Les kept me on as his piano player, and he used to feature me on accordion. But I wasn't really an accomplished piano player, but I played good enough to play in that big band, you know, just some Count Basie like fills and like that. It wasn't I didn't have to play concertos or anything, you know, really difficult. But I did some of the Bob Hope shows then at that time.
Tell us one good Bob Hope story. I know everybody'd want to know.
Let's see. Well, he was an avid golfer, you know. And I played golf on the island of Guam with Bob Hope and a four-star general. So a little accordion player. And so that was a... But being with Les was a golfer, and I'm a golfer. And so he used to take me with him to all these wonderful private country clubs all over the country when we would do a tour. And so he told everyone that I was his pro.
What was your handicap?
I was about an 8, it was 7 or 8 handicap. So we got to play all the famous courses, you know.
Isn't that great?
And it was great fun. And I was with him from 72 to 76. And it was one of the nicest periods.
Were you playing Potosa at that time, or when did you meet Joe Potosa Sr.?
No, I was playing, what was I playing?
Oh, we don't care what you were playing. We're a Potosa club.
I was playing Giulietti. I was playing Giulietti. No, Joe knows that.
How did you run into Joe Sr.? Or was it
Joe Sr. Invited me to do a concert up for the accordion club up in Seattle, and since then I've done three concerts up there. But that's where I first met him, and that's a funny story. I was playing Giulietti, and I didn't take my instrument with me because, you know, I'm not a classical player. I can play on any really good accordion, a good professional accordion. So I just used a Potosa, you know. And Joe gave me one of his real good instruments. So it was fine. I didn't have any problem at all. I loved it, you know. But Julio found out about it. He was really mad at me. But we patched things up. And he's a friend. They were friends.
Now, I've heard it's been said that if you hear an accordion in a Hollywood movie, it's probably Frank Morocco. What soundtrack did you enjoy playing the most?
I did several that were a lot of fun. A lot of times on movie soundtracks, like if you're a part of like a 100-piece orchestra, the accordion is just one of the sounds in the band. You don't even really hear it. Sometimes it's featured and sometimes it's not. Usually in a smaller group, it's featured. I did a a few movies where I was given screen credits at the end of the movie because the accordion was featured. And one of them was Under the Tuscan Sun, I remember. Another was Deep End of the Ocean. I was actually in that movie in a scene.
All right, now tell us some more about that. What did you do in the movie in a scene?
Well, I just had a couple words to say, you know, a couple of lines. Then in another one, Matchstick Men, I did with Hans Zimmer. And he featured the accordion all through the score, and I got end credits for that, too. But sometimes, in some of the movies, you're just a different flavor in part of the, maybe part of the woodwind section or part of the, in the strings, and the accordion is not really prominent. Like recently I did Shark Tale, and I wrote two of the songs in that movie. One was called Shark Tale, or Shark Fin Soup, I named it. And another one was, I forgot the name, it was like a tarantella. And they used it in one of the scenes as underscore. But the dialogue was so loud, you could hardly hear the accordion. So, you know, that's what you have to put up with.
Well, that's usually the way it is sometimes.
It's like, you know, it's like when you're an actor, right, and you end up on a cutting room floor. You know?
Yep, I've been there.
So you've been there.
I read about the National Academy of Arts and Sciences. They nominated you 8 years in a row as its most valuable player. Tell us what that really means.
Well, I wasn't the only most valuable player. I was the most valuable player for miscellaneous, what they call miscellaneous instruments, like organ, harmonica, banjo, accordion, we're called miscellaneous. But every player, like the best saxophone player, the best clarinet player, the best, you know, individual on their horn was given a most valuable player. So it's not as, you know, great as it seems.
I think you're downplaying it. I think that's a fine honor that...
I don't underplay it, but it's just that I was one of many most valuable players. I was the most valuable on my instrument.
Now, in terms of your composing, you were talking about a few minutes ago when you were writing some songs. Do you write both jazz, and you've composed classicals as well. Which do you prefer?
I prefer jazz. Okay. That's what I do that comes most natural to me.
When did you and Art Van Dam first run into each other?
Well, I've always, you know, he's been an idol of mine. I always blame him for getting me hooked on music, you know. I played only classical music until I was about 16. I started when I was 7, and I was studying with that fella I mentioned, George Stefani. And then I won that contest in Chicago, and then all I could play was the song I won with, you know, and I thought, what am I going to do with this? You know, I worked all year on this piece that I won a prize, but now what do I do, you know? So that was about that time that I heard the Art Van Dam Quintet on a daily show called Maxwell House Coffee Time.
Yep, and Art wrote the theme song for that show. Yeah, I played for 16 or 17 years, Ecstasy,
right? And so that hooked me. I thought, I wasn't that thrilled with classical music, to tell you the truth, you know. And I played pretty good, but, my heart was not in it. But then when I heard Art, I thought, yeah, that's the way. That's the way I want to go. So he sort of hooked me on, you know, getting interested in jazz and doing other things, you know. So,
did you run into each other out on the road from time to time?
Yeah, one time we ran into each other in the airport in Copenhagen. Yeah, because, you know, Art did a lot of touring, and I've done some, not as much as Art, but we did run into each other.
Yeah, Art, I think he told me he traveled over to Europe 37 times for concerts in his career.
That's
a lot of work.
Yeah, that's about several more times than I've been over there, maybe 30.
Now, I have to ask you... you and your wife, Ann, you've got 3 daughters and 8 grandchildren?
Yes.
Any of them musicians?
My oldest daughter was a very fine musician. She played the flute, and she played in the American Youth Symphony, which consisted of mostly high school and college players. And she was the youngest. She was only 13 when she made that orchestra. So she was very, very good. But then when she went into college, she got interested in other things. And her heart wasn't in it, even though she was an outstanding player. But I never pushed her. Maybe I should have when thinking about it. But then I wouldn't have three of my beautiful grandchildren. She would have gone a different way. So.
All right, you got to tell us now. What's your biggest challenge now that you head into the twilight years of your career?
Well, just to enjoy and try and stay healthy and just keep playing, trying to get better. And, you know, it's always been my goal is to just trying to keep getting better, you know.
How do you get better when you're already a perfectionist that we know you are?
No, I'm not a perfectionist, no. No, matter of fact, speaking of perfection, unless I make a few mistakes, that means I wasn't taking very many chances. Because I try to include in my program some improvisation, you know, where I'm improvising and just out on a tight wire, you know. And unless I do that, then I'm not really doing what I do, you know, because I don't just memorize things and play note for note. That's classical. And that's not jazz. There are certain forms that I use over and over again, like the formation of an arrangement. But then I always include some improvisation within the arrangement, and I always try and take some chances. You know, sometimes I get over in left field and try and work my way back. But that's the fun of it, you know.
All right, folks.
That's where the fun is.
You heard it here first at the Arizona Accordion Club. Frank Morocco likes to take chances with his accordion.
Yeah, Frank, otherwise I'm a pretty boring person.
I don't think so. I just met you 10 minutes ago, and I'm really enjoying talking with you, Frank.
You take chances musically.
Yes, you do. And we know that for sure. We're looking forward to your concert tonight, and especially thank you for this interview. We really appreciate
it. You're welcome. Thank you, Bob. You appreciate it.